Blog Talk Radio.
To the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men and women of Police and Fire Services by Dr. Kathleen Carroll, a board-certified psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll previously was the Director of Inpatient Services at the Bay Pines VA Hospital and the Bay Pines VA Medical Center. Dr. Carroll specializes in treatment of children 6 and older and in treatment of adults, in other words, from the womb to the tomb. She's also an all-time triathlete, so if you have any problems breaking through with life or you're having any problems breaking through in sports, give her a call at her office at 813-689-2466 or make an appointment and visit her at 336 East Bloomingdale Avenue in Brandon, Florida. Well, Z, it's been a tough 2 weeks we've been off here, but I want to make sure that we wish you and your family and Ty and his family the very merry, happy holidays and very merry Christmas. So,
Absolutely, absolutely. And I hope that the Carroll family, your holidays and Thanksgiving was well, and I also wish you guys a happy Christmas.
Thank you. We're going to dedicate tonight's show to a guy who was a man above men, a very learned person, always had his nose in a book somewhere. He was a state trooper in the state of Delaware. He was a sergeant. He was a family man. He was out actually running with his son when he had passed away. Ronald Bond, good man. And we wish the family, and I know his brothers, and I hope that they'll be able to get through this this holiday season in a very warm, our warmest condolences go out to them. So I want to get that out of the way. Hey, we got Anthony Joshua seems to be having the lighter part of laughter. He wants Tyson Fury, Joseph Parker, or Deontay Wilder. I don't know what the hell he was smoking that day, but he certainly does has a list here.
Yeah, well, to get things out of the way as far as Tyson Fury goes, there was a picture. I don't know what kind of shape he is and at this very moment, but the last time I saw Tyson Fury, he was in no shape for boxing at all. Maybe pie eating or something of that sort, but he's not in any boxing shape. Deontay Wilder would be at the moment the biggest money fight, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I also think it'd be the biggest money fight only in England. I think the pay-per-view numbers. You want that American crowd for Vegas, but I think you're
right.
Still going to get the same pay-per-view numbers you would get as far as in England, but you would get that crowd. You would definitely have that crowd. And those numbers, the gate numbers, would be very good. With that said, I don't know if boxing-wise, in my estimation, that Joshua is ready for a Wilder fight. I think Joseph Parker would be the most sensible step. I don't think Joseph Parker is ready for a Joshua fight. I don't necessarily think he may ever be ready. So, you take this fight where you can. Joshua right now, between him and Wilder, are considered the champions. I know Parker has a title, but top men in the division are Wilder and Joshua. So, as far as that goes, I think Parker... I would think that Parker would want to see Joshua. This is the best time I think it would be for Parker to see Joshua. Just because Parker's getting better, but Joshua is taking those steps to where he's really looking like he's that guy. So, you catch him when they're green.
You know,
even
it's funny because, Chris has always said, in the olden days, as we'll call them, or days before, you used to have 50 to 100 fights before you got a fight like this. But these guys are coming out at 10, 12, and 15 fights and think that they're going to fight for championships.
Yeah, in the olden days, you weren't even heard of unless you had, or unless you were one of those guys who may have had 10 fights and then you beat a guy who had one of the more established guys.
Right.
So, it wasn't just going to work out, and guys would face tougher competition to where, and that's what I'm beginning to like, man, that it's beginning to come back around a little bit that guys aren't just giving up their undefeated record.
Right.
They're putting that on the line. And that's one thing that boxing for a long time, it was missing. It was that guy.
Mm-hmm.
They would be. I mean, they still have that now. Don't get it wrong. Guys are being built up, with lesser competition, so they can keep that O in their loss to the column. But that doesn't really, to be honest, improving in my estimation, that doesn't establish a guy as being a good fighter, because when they do fight the guys who may have one loss or two losses, but they face better competition, then you see the difference. You see guys who've been hyped up. One thing is, once you get to a certain level, boxing tells the truth. It tells the truth about who you are and what you're going to be.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's a good point you brought up, because you got two guys coming back in on December 9th, Lomachenko and Regan Diaw, that haven't fought in, what, about a year?
Well, Lomachenko's fighting maybe a few months ago, and Regan Diaw's been off for, I think Regan Diaw has been off a little longer, but I don't think either one has been off quite a year yet.
Yeah.
Regan Diaw is longer in the tooth, obviously,
mm-hmm.
and he's also the smaller of the two.
Right.
But he's also the more seasoned as a, well, they're both very, you know, were very seasoned amateurs.
Mm-hmm.
Regan Diaw is a more seasoned pro, obviously. But
sure.
As I said, at a lighter, as a lighter guy. So we're going to see.
Ty, welcome, Ty. We're just talking about Lomachenko and Regan Diaw next week.
Oh yeah, that's a fight. That's a like a hardcore fan fight dream, because obviously it pits two of quite possibly the most decorated amateur boxers of all time meeting as champions in the pro ranks. Regan Diaw's a little older, but he's given up a lot of size to Lomachenko as well. So yeah, it's going to be a very interesting fight. I say that if you have youngsters who are looking to get into boxing, that's a fight you might want to watch. You could just study the skill sets of each boxer. Great, great
mm-hmm.
opportunity.
Yeah.
I will be.
That's a that'll be a fight that
yeah.
That definitely you shouldn't miss.
And the contrast, just to harp on it, just to kind of hype it up a little more, the contrast of the two, they're both very different fighters, but they do things similarly. They both like to have their own pace. They both
mm-hmm.
like to establish control of the ring for the most part. Regan Diaw a little more to sacrifice it, but and at differences, Lomachenko is busy. He functions
mm-hmm.
better busy, and he's kind of herky jerky. He's not a still guy. To where Regan Diaw is not as much of a mover. He can move, and he moves very with a lot of education to his movement and purpose. It's going to be interesting to see if Regan Diaw can settle Lomachenko down, meaning if he can kind of quiet his busy work down. If Regan Diaw
mm-hmm.
can do that, I think
mm-hmm.
that he might not get it on the cards. I think size, age, and the judging is against him.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he could maybe put up a case for himself.
Mm-hmm. Ty?
Well, you know, I got to agree with Z. Lomachenko is the bigger, stronger fighter. With that said, Regan Diaw, I believe, per one shot hits harder.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, too, is even though Regan Diaw has given up like three inches in height, he still has like a 2 or 3 inch advantage as well, too. So there's some things that could play in his favor. Like Zito said, you know, Lomachenko's a busy fighter. He actually fights better coming forward than he does going backwards. And, you know, it's funny because when we think of fundamental or fluid pure boxers, we tend to think of guys who fight off the back foot, but that's just not the case. Lomachenko is extremely fundamentally sound, but he likes to step forward and throw a lot of punches, getting his opponent's wheelhouse. With that said, you know, Regan Diaw is a more economical puncher, and he's a more devastating puncher. So we have guys whose styles kind of play into each other's hands. This is a very interesting fight. I just wish they were a little closer in age and size.
Hey, guys, we're joined by Dr. Chris. Chris, we're talking about the Lomachenko and Regan Diaw fight next week.
Wow. Your guess is as good as mine. How the hell do you figure that one out?
Yeah.
I tend to favor Lomachenko just off of size, youth, and the judging.
Activity. And activity. Regan Diaw fought like maybe 4 times in 3 years. You know what I mean? And Lomachenko's been active, so.
What's going to be the difference in weight?
Well, Regan Diaw's coming up from 122 to fight Lomachenko at 130. There is a rehydration clause for the morning of the fight that neither fighter can be any higher than 138.
Well, you know what? It still favors Lomachenko.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Rigondeaux's a smaller man. He couldn't put all that weight on anyway, but Lomachenko can fight at a bigger weight. He's got a bigger body.
Yeah.
And I think he's a harder puncher. Although Rigondeaux's a hell of a fighter, you know. I mean, that fight could put you to sleep, or it could be a boxer's, you know, dream to see somebody...
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think if it puts you to sleep, that plays directly into Rigondeaux's hand.
You know, you don't know which way it's going to go, but you're going to see boxing at its best. No question about that. I thought about this, you know, from months ago. I'm going to go with Lomachenko. I just can't bet against that guy. He just got fascinating coordination and timing and everything. I mean, Rigondeaux's good, don't get me wrong, but, you know, I think he's up against a world beater, you know? I just don't think he can – I think overall 12 rounds I got to go with Lomachenko. The harder puncher, I think he can kind of overpower – just a little bit. I think he can outstrength Rigondeaux. What do you guys?
I don't know if I don't think he's going to really outstrength Rigondeaux. Lomachenko, I think the real difference is probably going to be hand speed. Lomachenko is probably the speedier fighter with the hand speed. Well, I think Rigondeaux puts a little bit more into his punches.
Rigondeaux's left hand counter, I agree with you. I think Lomachenko is the faster fighter with his hands, but I think that's because Rigondeaux might be quicker, and I still think he hits harder and is a little bit quicker with single shots, which is what he looks to really do, to punish you with single shots. I think Lomachenko's strength combination is better, faster together. I really do.
Yeah, and I think it's all about Lomachenko not putting himself out there. He doesn't normally put himself out there anyway when he puts his combinations. But just throwing combinations, period, puts you out there. So I think Rigondeaux has better timing, period, than Lomachenko. But Lomachenko has very, very good timing. And I think he can put enough combinations and not be in danger, maybe enough.
All right, how about tonight's fight? We've got Miguel Cotto going against Saddam Ali.
You know what, I think Cotto can beat that guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not that wild about Ali. I saw him fight a couple of times up in Brooklyn. I'm not that wild about him. I think he's getting a nice payday with Cotto. But Cotto, mm-hmm. Cotto's got enough left, I think, to beat him.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you. I think you said it perfectly, Dr. Chris. I think Cotto has enough left to beat Ali. Ali is, you know what, at a lighter weight, I would probably have a little more confidence in Ali. But Ali's not the most sturdiest guy at 147 to me. He's fast, he's flashy, and he's a quick kind of slick guy, which I think would give Cotto trouble early. But one thing Cotto will do. He's going to cut the ring off. He's pretty good at that forward boxing. Gotten back better at it with Freddie Roach, as far as that style. I think that's in. Once Cotto kind of comes out with that and really starts letting that left hook go to the body, I don't think Saddam Ali is going to be able to take it.
There's no question that Cotto will bring the fight to Ali. Otherwise, there'd be no fight. Ali likes to run, but I don't think he's got enough left when he's going in reverse. I mean, I don't think Ali's got enough left when he's backing up hurt Cotto.
No.
I don't think Cotto's got any fear. He's going to just wade right in there and bang away. And I think, you know, he'll beat him. I think Cotto will beat him.
Yeah. Now what scares me a little bit about just the Cotto fight is the last fight against Comegan. Cotto got hit a lot that fight. Cotto won clean. Cotto actually had to pull out his boxing skill to win that fight clean. He can't do that against Ali. He's not that kind of fight. Cotto can't fight against Ali. I just think that Cotto's going to be the one backing up. If Cotto is trying to be cute and trying to, you know, get like that on Ali, he's going to have problems. And I think that's where it comes in early, that he's going to have those problems early, but he's going to get the kind of, you know, Freddie's going to tell him go forward, you know, get back to, you know, get really in the guy's chest. And I don't think Ali can stop him from doing that.
Yeah, Cotto has no other way to win than to be very aggressive and bang away at the body and just throw caution to the wind. Just wait. He's not a hard enough puncher to hold Cotto off. You know, I just don't think he could hit that hard.
Cotto needs to be. He needs to keep caution though, because Ali can be sharp. And I mean, Cotto, you just don't want to keep getting hit sharp. With that said, Ali's, I think he's taller and longer, but Cotto's been fighting that all his career. Ali, maybe a little, he has a bit more hand speed than Cotto.
Yes,
Cotto,
he does.
Can't
argue
Cotto,
that.
Cotto, yeah, Ali, he also, with the help of, is he has a tendency to fight straight. I think he can maybe bag some rounds on Cotto like that.
Ali has advantages in length and range, height, youth, and hand speed. And, you know, one thing that has to be said, too, Saddam Ali has an Olympic pedigree, too. So, you know, he's seen the best of the best in the world. With that said, no more is it true than it said when it said in boxing. There are levels to this. Saddam Ali, for, you know, his flashes of tremendous skill, they've only been flashes. We're talking about a guy who got knocked out 9 by Jesse Vargas. That guy doesn't beat a Miguel Cotto. There are levels to this. The other thing, too, is when we talk about the Comegan fight, Comegan landed a lot of punches on Miguel Cotto, and Zito's right. We don't want to see, if you're a Miguel Cotto fan, you don't want to see Saddam Ali putting punches together and landing them at that rate on Miguel Cotto. But with that said, Comegan had to walk through what Miguel Cotto was nailing him with. Remember, at the end of the fight, they were extolling about Comegan. That's not going to happen with Saddam Ali. Saddam Ali can't take those shots. Not to mention, if Saddam Ali gets hit with those shots, he's going to be on his bike. Like Zito said, he fights skittish by nature. He tends to want to just get his shots off and get out. And that could bag him a few rounds against Cotto. But just like Dr. Chris said, Saddam Ali, whether he's coming forward, coming back, or planting into the canvas, doesn't really have the power to deter a Cotto from coming forward. Cotto's going to come forward, put his punches together well, because that's what he does. He's going to work the body. And eventually he's going to beat this kid up, I believe. If he doesn't, to me that's more of a testament on where Cotto's at this stage of his career as opposed to what we can see out of Saddam Ali. For the future of boxing, be really, you know, it'd be fun if Saddam Ali were to step up, put everything together finally, and beat a Miguel Cotto, because then we have, you know, more fights coming up in the future. But unfortunately, I don't see that happening. I think Saddam Ali, nothing so far has showed me that he is ready for this next level, this next tier in boxing. This is a step up for him. He's stepping into the elite, even though Cotto is aged. And at this point, his one step up to quality, he's got a couple step ups to quality. One fared well, one not so well. It was a fresher body he fought that got him knocked out. So with that said, man, you know, I see him getting beat up eventually, Saddam Ali.
Hey, guys, we're joined by our first guest, one of the guys who we have had a chance to see in Delaware. We've seen him in Philadelphia, and now he even traveled to Poland for his last fight. Amir, how are you today?
Hey, how you doing, man?
Amir Mansour. Great. Amir, that certainly, from what I could read, certainly sounded like one hell of a fight that you had over in Poland.
Honestly, it was only 3 rounds, so it's nothing.
Hey, Amir, how's the cut, man? I know you got a really bad cut from that head, but how's that cut healing up on you already?
Well, the cut is obviously healing. I'm a healthy person. I heal pretty good. It is what it is, you know.
And when you fight over there, how big was the crowd? Was it bigger than you get around here?
It was a large crowd. It was in Russia, Moscow, Russia, by the way. It was a large crowd over there. It was a good crowd. Very big arena. Very nice venue. Very nice people. Myths and rumors and stuff like that about the Russian people and its culture and how they treat certain, you know, African Americans in particular. It's a bunch of just talk, man. You know what I mean? We were treated very respectful over there. And believe it or not, when they introduced me and I came out into the ring, the people cheered for us.
Good.
Not one boo.
Good. Excellent.
And I'm not even going to say that credit is towards what type of fighter I am. I just think that it just shows a different type of culture and mentality and respect that some people have for athletes.
You've had some really
like Americans.
Fights.
Americans boo everybody. They love
Man, it's ridiculous.
For real.
Especially Philly.
Yeah. I actually joked. I said, Dag, I said, I can go a couple states over in my own country and get booed because I'm not from that town. And here I am on the other side of the planet, and, you know, no one's booing. They're all cheering. So that was an eye-opener.
Amir, you've had some really good talent that you faced here in America. How would you count the last fight, the talent that you had there.
Kuzmin, he's a good guy. He's a good fighter. I mean, he's talented. Mm-hmm. He's very talented. He's fast. He's a lot faster than he looks on screen. He's strong. You know, he's a talented kid, man. He's a talented fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Amir Kuzmin was coming into the fight 11-0, 8 knockouts. They're obviously trying to fast track the kid, which is why they had him step up to your level.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the fight was you know, cut short. From everything I heard, it was shaping up to be a really good fight. You said the kid is pretty good. Can the kid hang on that level? I mean, I think obviously eventually you probably would have got him out of there because that's what I believe in you. But can the kid hang on that level that you guys are on right now? Is he ready for that next level?
Look, guys, I don't want to ruin the possible rematch, you know? But honestly, yeah, man, yeah, he can hang with guys on this level. He can.
Amir, with all everything that's going on, who do you see as your next opponent?
Maybe him. I really don't know, man. I mean, a lot of people keep talking about me and Big Baby, but, you know, we both have mutual respect for each other. And it's like, look, we're both right here on the East Coast representing the East Coast. You know, why people trying to keep putting two East Coast fighters against each other when there's so many Midwest and West Coast fighters that him and I could be challenging and jockeying for positions instead of each other? And I really don't think that's fair to either one of us, you know what I mean? You know, at the end of the day. But, you know, when it's all said and done, I mean, he'll fight me if the, you know, presentation is proper, and I'll fight him if the presentation is proper.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm curious of? The heavyweight that's out of Philly, the guy that's maybe 5'11", 260, he was heavier. Freddie Roach has him now. You know what I'm thinking of?
Are you talking about Rock Damien?
Rock, yeah. What do you think of him? I just was the other night sitting in a restaurant, and a guy came up and said he'd like to fight you. This is one of the guys he'd like to box as Mansoor. So, what do you think of that fight? Do you think he's ready for you?
I don't believe that, first of all. I mean, whoever said that to you was lying. If we're talking about the same person, you know, whoever said that to you was lying.
A guy from Virginia Beach that
exactly.
From
and
Virginia
he,
Beach
Rock's
that
from,
knows.
Rock's from, he's from Philly, right?
Yeah.
And this guy is from Virginia Beach, so I can assure you that those words never came out of this young kid's mouth. I'm actually good friends with him and his father, and
I heard you guys were good buddies.
We're not buddies, but you know we're friends.
Yeah, I know.
You know, I look at him like a little brother in this sport right here. And my trainer actually brought him up throughout his amateur career, and so he's grown up sparring with me and stuff like that. And I'm quite sure that I'm not on his radar. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh. No,
but
as far as his
talent is concerned, he's very big, and he you know, you look at a guy his size and with his physique, and you don't think they're fast or anything like that. But I guarantee you, this kid is one of the fastest heavyweights I've ever been in the ring with, and he is super, super strong. I swear to you, he got a piston fast jab that is out of this world. Blew my mind.
Now, Amir,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, Amir, now, you mentioned Big Baby. I think that would be an interesting fight with you. I think probably one of the more exciting fights, and I think that they probably should line this up, is you against Dylan White. How would you think?
Dylan White had several opportunities to fight me. He's a scared punk. And you guys know I'm very respectful of fighters.
Yeah, you don't talk about fighters like that. I've never heard anything like that about a fighter.
He's a sissy. He should wear a skirt and start cross-dressing.
Damn.
He's a sissy. He had two opportunities that I know for a fact. I want to say three, but two certain opportunities to face me, and both times he turned it down. But if you ask him, he'll say, "Yeah, I'll fight him. I want to fight him." He's a sissy. He's lying. He had the opportunity several times, and he will not fight Amir Mansour. And you could ask Eddie Hearn that. Ask Eddie Hearn, why does Dylan turn down fights with Amir Mansour when he had the opportunity to fight Amir? Why did he turn it down? Ask Eddie that.
Because Amir Mansour hits harder than Derek Chisora.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Amir Mansour is quicker than Derek Chisora.
Simply
exactly.
Yeah. Amir, at one point, I know you were working with Dave Tiberi and Champs. Who are you with now?
You said Dave Tiberi?
Yeah, weren't you with Dave Tiberi when you were fighting down in Delaware?
No, I was with Nick Tiberi. Nick Tiberi.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Champions. At
Ellesmere, Delaware. I was with Nick Tiberi, not as fighter trainer. Nick was like Nick's been an advisor to me my whole career. Basically, that's my relationship to the Tiberis is through Nick, and Nick was able to put me in a lot of fights down in Dover Downs.
Right.
In Delaware and stuff like that. So that's my relationship. And I met the rest of the family through Nick, but I've never worked with any one of the other guys besides Nick as far as boxing is concerned.
And who are you working with now?
My trainer is David Sewell.
Okay.
Dave's been my trainer. Dave's been in my corner since 2012, but he's been head trainer my last two fights.
Great. And do you see anything coming up in early 2018?
I'm hoping so, man. I'm really hoping so. You know, man, I've only fought three times in the past 2 years, and it's sad, it's depressing, and it's just ridiculous. The amount of guys that get an opportunity to fight me and they turn it down. You guys wouldn't believe how hard it is for me to get a fight. So that's why you see me taking a damn 12-round fight on an 8-day notice, you know, way over in Russia. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah.
I stay in shape. So, and I know those are the type of calls that will come. So I was ready for it. But, you know, the state of this heavyweight division is really pathetic, if you ask me. It's just pathetic, man, because you guys saw the Wilder Stiverne fight. You know, that's pathetic. And that's what happens when politics and not talent gets you a title shot. You understand what I'm saying? But the reality is that they had a sharp referee on his toes that night. This guy could have really got hurt because he was out. You understand? He could have really got hurt. So what happens when somebody that doesn't get in, you know, with the real talent, and you got guys like this with no talent, but politics is getting him a title shot, what happens when somebody gets killed? You understand? Mm-hmm. What happens when somebody ends up in a damn wheelchair for the rest of their life? Then people will start saying something, or they'll start trying to make changes. You know what I mean? Like, here in America, we don't learn no lessons unless somebody gets killed or hurt real bad. But we consume to a lot of wrongdoing all the time. Like, we still support certain promoters that put on a Deontay Wilder and Stiverne fight. We'll still support them. You understand? And so they keep getting away with stuff like that. But it's going to have to come a time where either the fans of boxing are going to make a stand against this nonsense, or the fighters themselves, you know? And in this case, I believe that the fans would have to, because these fighters, you got too many sissies, man, that, you know, they all want to take a blueprint from Klitschko, how he reigned for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Fighting duck after duck after duck in the heavyweight division. I'm not going to blame it all on Klitschko, but, you know, the heavyweight championship of the world no longer is the heavyweight championship of the world. That used to be synonymous, man, with the Super Bowl, with the World Series, you know?
Yeah.
And now it's just like a ESPN Friday night fight, you know? And that's ridiculous to me, man. It's mind-boggling. You know, everybody gets a piece of inflation. You know, people benefit from inflation. You understand?
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't survive making the wages that, whatever job you have outside of this, you couldn't survive if you were making the wages that dudes were making 25 years ago. Right?
Right.
Now, But with us heavyweights, we're making about 10% of what heavyweights were making 10, 15, 20 years ago. We're making about 10% of what, you understand what I'm saying? So everybody benefits from inflation except the heavyweight division, man. It is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And I try and express to these dudes, listen, if we don't start fighting and putting the best against the best, and putting that excitement back into this division, we're going to continue not getting paid. We're going to continue, you know, the heavyweight championship of the world, not a pay-per-view bout.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, man.
You had Klitschko and
what's his name? He was the WBC champ, Hayes. You had Klitschko and Hayes fighting, and HBO really didn't even want to pick it up. You understand what I'm saying? You had two heavyweight champions of the world, and it was a fight that really was off the radar.
Yeah.
And that is the state that, at that point, where, you know, oh, Klitschko's fighting again. Oh, big deal. He's going to fight a bump, you know. And unless you were a boxing fan or enthusiast, you wasn't even trying to watch it. But in the past, the heavyweight championship of the world, all you had to do was hear those words, and you're trying to get a ticket. You're trying to watch it on TV. You're trying to go see it. You understand what I'm saying? And the only way that we could really become relevant again is if we bring that excitement back into this division. And as long as the promoters and the networks keep allowing these champions and keep allowing guys that's in the top 10 to fight mediocre opposition, then that's what it's going to be. Look at Dylan White, right? Look at Dylan White, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here it is now, and they're saying he's the mandatory for a championship title, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who the hell has he beat since he lost to Joshua? Can you
Derek
even remember
Chisora.
The name of
that
his
is
opponent?
It.
You understand
God,
what I'm saying?
That is his biggest win,
what
Derek
I'm saying? Chisora. And already he's a mandatory challenger for a world title. This is the stoop or stage that the heavyweight division is in, and we have to stop it, man. We got to stop it with the politics and let guys get their shot by earning their shot. I'm the most decorated heavyweight in the history of boxing that has never gotten a title shot. Can you believe that? In the history of this sport. Yeah.
What do you think about maybe a heavyweight tournament, as long as you're in it? But what would you think about a heavyweight tournament?
Even if I'm not in it, I mean, you know, Don King did plenty of tournaments back in the day that people paid attention to and brought some excitement into that, you know, ultimate showdown of whoever won, you know. I mean, whatever puts the top against the top, whatever puts them top 10 fighters against each other, whatever it's called, a tournament or ornament, whatever. It's going to be a good thing. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Whatever it is. But if you do have a heavyweight tournament and it's full of guys that you don't even know, you never heard of, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Then it's useless. Just because it's a tournament, it doesn't mean nothing. You got to put the best in against the best in order for it to mean anything.
Hey, Amir, I got a question for you. You have the controversial loss on the scorecards to Stevie Cunningham, a fight in which you actually could have been ruled a knockout winner, and you had an injury in a fight you were winning against Dominic Brazil. Do you still in your heart kind of feel that you're an unblemished fighter?
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, I know in my heart that I've never been beaten up, you know. In terms of just being outshined in the ring, that has never happened throughout my career. And so, yeah, you know, I feel as though I am, and anybody that knows boxing, they can look at the record and the tapes and say, damn, this guy never, you know, he really never been, you know, outclassed or outshined in this ring, you know. Against Brazil, I was on all the judges' scorecard. I won every single round. You know, the only way he could have won that fight is knocking me out. You know, but of course, you know, like the doctor said, man, if you would have did one more round, you'd be dead right now. When they was pumping my stomach and seeing all the blood that I had swallowed, and you know, I never knew swallowing blood was poisonous. You know, I didn't know that, but you can actually die from it. A lot of people don't know when Meldrick Taylor and Chavez fought the first time, Meldrick Taylor went to the hospital and went into a coma because he swallowed so much blood. That's it. It wasn't head injury. It wasn't. He swallowed so much blood, he literally into a coma. You understand what I'm saying? No, he wasn't eternally bleeding. He was swallowing blood all night long. And that's one of the results of that. It's life-threatening, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, at the end of the day, that's like only something like that can get me to tap out, you know what I'm saying? But at the end of the, you know, I mean, only I was trying not to throw up, you know what I mean? I'm trying to fight, but at the same time, I'm trying to hold my throw up in, you know, it was a useless cause, you know, really. But at the end of the day, they raised his hand at the end of the day, and that is a loss. So, you know, he won the fight fair and square, you know what I mean? But, you know, in my heart, I know that I'm one of the best fighters out here on the entire planet, and I definitely represent danger to anybody that get in that ring with me.
With that and, you know, the headbutt shortened fight, the way you're avoided, do you kind of feel like you're a tough luck fighter right now? At times?
Yeah. I feel like a guy that takes his woman out on dates. He buys her flowers. He cooks for her. He cleans for her. He pays all her bills. He gives her everything he got. And he walks in one day, and she got his best friend cock in her mouth. That's what I feel.
Damn.
That's what I feel like. That's what I feel like in terms of what boxing has done for me. You know, I absolutely nothing, to be honest with you. I feel like I've given this sport a lot. I know I've given it a lot, you know, personally. I feel like I've given it a lot also from a fan base perspective, you know what I'm saying, and keeping some people interested in the heavyweight division. And I know I gave it all that I got. You know, I sacrificed a lot for the sport, and nothing in return, man. Absolutely nothing.
Well, one thing I say, and I hope this sweetens it up a little bit, is that display against Travis Kaufman was much appreciated, or against Kaufman was appreciated. I like the way that you established your jab and you turned, kind of steered the fight in your direction. You showed, I know you're a tough guy, you like to get in there and mix it up, but in that fight you showed a lot more than that.
Yeah, they thought we were going to come out banging. One thing that anybody will tell you that know me, I'm not a gym fighter. You know, an amateur, it'll probably look like he'll whoop my butt in the gym. You know what I'm saying? When I get under the lights, that's when I perform. Like Muhammad Ali, they said he probably never won a sparring match if you scored sparring. You know, Ali just would get, you know, and like Bo and Holyfield. Holyfield says every time he sparred Bo, he just manhandled him. He did whatever he wanted. He just beat him easily and then get in a real fight with him, and it's a ball game changer. So, you know, at the end of the day, man, excuse me.
Amir,
they,
I got,
thought
a question
we were going
for
to
you.
Come out. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
now you're
thought we
you
were
say
come out banging. We decided to box and give them a totally different look that they wasn't prepared for it. So, you know, thank you for that, because I can box. A lot of people don't know that.
Oh yeah.
Amir, I got a question for you. You say David Tua is your new trainer. Now you guys are similar.
David Sewell. David Sewell. Not David Tua, man.
Oh, well, that's
over
David
here.
Tua.
You over there.
Oh, okay, you threw me off there for a minute. Okay.
You over there sipping on something over there, man. No, not David Tua, man. Not David. Not David Tua. No. David Sewell. David Sewell.
Well, Amir, we really appreciate the time you've given us tonight. I know you're busy trying to take care of some business there.
Yeah,
we appreciate your time
right now.
Yeah,
no problem, man. No problem.
And,
no problem.
You know, I hope that you do get something in the very near future, and we certainly hope that you'll give us a chance to tell the world about it. You know, we still have our following still is at about 216, almost 217,000 listeners right now worldwide. And we appreciate everything you do. We appreciate your style of fighting. We appreciate the fact that you've been so open to us, and you're always a great interview. So I want to thank
man,
you
I appreciate
for that.
It.
And I definitely will be in touch with you in the very near future.
Okay. You guys look for me in March, man. Hopefully. I can't let the cat out the bag.
Excellent.
But just look for me in March.
All right. Is that
most certainly.
We'll be,
all right.
We'll be in the States.
I don't know.
I'm just trying to get more information out of you.
I'll give you heads up.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right, you guys take
thanks
care, man. Thanks for having
hey,
me.
Hey, you
man.
Too.
Peace.
Thanks, man. Thanks. Appreciate
Thank
it,
you.
Man. Hey, guys, this is Ty. I actually have to go myself. Love you guys, and I will talk to you all next week.
Sounds great. All
right.
Thanks, Ty. Hey, Chris, I wanted to ask you about Lucas Matisse is coming back in the ring after a layoff on the – he's going to start the year off for HBO on the 27th of January. What do you think about him? He's going to be going against Jesus Garima.
You know, he's kind of a mystery. He left. He almost left the ring. I mean, he just like almost like quit and retired. You know, I mean, the last fight he had, he got beat, and he didn't look very well. You know, he was a brutal puncher, and he just didn't look right to me. He looked like he didn't want to fight anymore. So, you know, I think when he had time to think about it, now he realizes, hell, I packed it in too soon. There's a lot of competition left in the 140. Is he going to fight at 140 or 47? He's got to come in at 40.
I know he his last fight. I know he lost the starts with the T, the tall guy. He lost to him, the tall self. I forget his name. He lost to him by the knockout, and he did have a layoff for a while. I know that the last fight he had was at 147, and he brought Emmanuel Taylor out. Emmanuel Taylor was the guy who fought Broner before. It was a good fight. Broner won, though. But he brought Emmanuel Taylor up from 140, and it was a pretty good fight. Matisse looked good, and I think he may have stopped Taylor. I forgot how it ended, but Matisse looked good. He won the fight.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Zeke, let me ask you another
question. What's the big tall guy that he fought? I thought that big tall guy beat him.
Oh, he knocked him out. It was a knockout.
That's what I thought. He beat him.
Yeah.
It looked like to me he can't fight a guy that tall. He can't handle that height difference. He's only about 5'6", and he just couldn't handle that height difference. He got the hell beat out of him. Looked like to me he was ready to just quit boxing after that. I mean, he was disheartened, discouraged. You know, maybe he went back, thought about it, and then he got his battery recharged. You know, hey, I got a kick out of Mansoor. He speaks so quiet, I can't hear him real good. You know, I had to laugh. I still don't know what the hell the name of that guy that's his trainer. He said David, what was that last
Sewell.
Name?
Sewell, S-E-W-E-L-L.
Yeah. Oh, Sewell. I thought he said Tua, David Tua, the old fighter, the heavyweight that was about 5'7", the tough guy. You remember him?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that's who he said was training him, and I thought, boy, you guys are almost the same size, you know. And very seldom does a trainer and a fighter, you know, have the same fought the same way, you know, as each other. And I was thinking about that, and then he told me no, it was Sewell, what the hell ever it was.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Let me ask you, Orlando Salido is back in the ring next week in Vegas. He's been out of touch for a while. What do you think about this, about him getting back in the ring?
It all depends on who he fights. And the one thing about Salido is you know that he's not a light fight taker for the most part. Salido's getting older, and he's a guy who's been through many wars. As a matter of fact, most of his fights are going to be wars. That's a style of fighter. With a guy like that, depending on who he's fighting, if he's fighting a younger, kind of faster guy with pop, then, I mean, he's going to have to walk through some things, you know, to get to the guy, and hoping that the guy doesn't have this, you know, the strongest shot. But Salido, I mean, you wonder when it comes to a guy like that, what night is it going to be?
Mm-hmm.
What night? Because, I mean, I don't care how tough the nut is, every nut can crack.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you put your nut out there, the more that it keeps getting hit and hit. You know, the small cracks that we don't see, maybe it's one day, it all shatters. Maybe, you know, just comes apart and you just see it come apart slowly. But with Salido, you see him slowing down a bit, but not, you know, excessively on this level. It just depends on who he fights.
Hey, Chris, let me ask you one more question before we go here.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to really answer your question about the other guy, the Argentinian, coming back to fight. Yeah,
Matisse.
Matisse.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the hell. I don't know to be honest with you, he appeared so downbeaten, and when that big tall guy pounded him around, it looked like to me he wanted to quit boxing. Tell you the truth, I mean, he looked like he didn't give it his all. Usually, he's tough as nails. He's in there hanging in there till the last second. But you know, he's taking a lot of beatings, and I think sometimes after you take all those beatings and you're in rough fights all the time, you need to, you know, sit back a little bit and really consider your career, because you just can't go on fighting tough fights all the time like that guy from Siberia.
Political.
Yeah, I mean, that poor guy. He fought King Kong every time he got in the ring. He fought a killer. He never got a break. Does he fight anymore, or did he retire?
He fights, but he's kind of dropped off of that level a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think he's got. Yeah.
Yeah, Bob Arum's promoting him, so he's not going to go, but to so many fighters.
Mm-hmm. Well, Matisse is in the same category. Like, he reminds me of that guy.
One thing I'm going to say is Matisse, he's been fortunate enough to kind of. He's a hard guy, but he's not a guy who's been through wars. And I think he was down because that guy, he never been, you know, dealt with and dominated, you know, by anyone. That style, especially with a guy that long, that movement, would give Matisse trouble. He lost two fights. Well, one fight was called a draw, and he lost another on the cards, which both I thought he won against, you know, respectively, Devin Alexander and Zab Judah. Both guys were able to survive, and I say survive Matisse because, you know, both guys have pretty good movement. And, you know, I don't even really want to say a little pop, because Matisse, he's defensively responsible. Not the fastest guy, but he has long arms, and he moves with pretty good education. But Matisse is not a guy who's been through wars or a guy who necessarily is going to change the way he fights.
No, he can't.
Yeah.
He's limited to his height and reach. He has to fight the same way. Otherwise, a tall guy will beat him every time. He's got to come in and make the fight and be the aggressor. You know, he can't be a counterpuncher, you know, at that height and weight, you know, so. So I'm glad to see he's back, and I hope he's got a good mental attitude this time, you know, that he hasn't lost that mental attitude. You know, it's difficult to stay in the ring, just keep fighting year after year, tough guy, you know. Like Amir said, you know, the best against the best. Well, every time Matisse fought, it was against a pretty damn good opponent. He never had any easy opponents. You know,
yeah, once
even
you know, Dr. Chris, once you make it to that level, there are no such thing as, you know,
especially
it's not supposed to be.
In that 140-pound division, everybody's a killer. There's no bad fighters in that division.
And
now
he's not the marquee
fighter.
He's not the star that they, you know, they're really trying to promote. So he's going to have those tough fights.
Yeah. Now they got this new champion. Well, no, that one, not at 140, but I'm sorry, at 47. But what do you think the fighter from Kansas City out that way, Nebraska, do you think he's going to stay in his weight class?
Crawford. You talking about Terrence Crawford?
Yeah, Crawford.
I think he can make 147 easy. I think right at this moment, Crawford's not the oldest guy. I think he'd be more effective at 140, and there are guys out there who still could, you know, fight. He hasn't just cleaned 140 out by any means. So I think he's another guy promoted by Bob Arum. So I kind of have to, you know, that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now it's looking like promoters are doing slightly a little more cross promoting, slightly, but. Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't think he's ready to move to 147.
The promoters always protect their fighters. They protect their fighters. Some of them do it too much. That's what Amir was saying. You know, they protect their fighters. They don't fight the best. They want to, you know, keep their cash cow going, you know? They're making money off the guy. They want to get as many easy fights as they can for him.
True.
But he was right about that.
One thing I'll give Al Haymon a little bit of credit for is that he's been matching up the better fighters in their weight divisions in house, and that was that's a problem that I had. Like Don King wasn't doing that. That's the thing. I mean, I can understand, you know, if you want to at certain times keep, you know, the money in house, but you're not even matching the best fighters up, and you're going over to lesser promotions to get fighters that are, you know, aren't even on that caliber. You know, and that's a big problem when, you know, fighters are built more for their stats, for what's on paper, than what in all actuality was going on in the ring. People look at, you know, they look at it, oh, this guy's 12-0 with 11 knockouts. Then, if I look at something like that and I really, you know, want to see what's going on with a fighter, I'm going to look at the record of the guys that who's fought. I'm going to look at, you know, and then I'll look at some of the competition they may have lost to. So, I mean,
that's what you really have to look at. You got to look at his competition, you know?
Exactly. And
this guy that's coming up, this heavyweight that's coming up out of Virginia Beach, the Sicilian fighter, his level of competition is awful. I mean, the guys that he's fighting dead men, you know? I said it to the other guy from Virginia Beach. I said, if he don't step up his level of competition, he's not going to go anywhere. Right. I mean, he fought dead guys, you know? I mean, matter of fact, I'm noticing that a lot. I'm noticing that there's a lot of unequal opponents. And if you watch these reruns and some of the and not the biggest fights, but you watch these mediocre fights, my God, the guy's got a 12-0 record. He fought 10 grandmothers, you know? You know? Right. You know, fought his brother-in-law and somebody. I mean, what the hell? You got to fight somebody. I mean, I know it's nice to build a record.
I know who writes Mansoor's dissertations for him.
I mean, they say you are who you fight. When the reality comes, you are who you fight. If you're fighting dead men, then when the truth comes out and you're fighting somebody who's not a dead man, you're going to be a dead man. You're going to fight like a dead man. That's what's been in front of you all that time. Now, if you have live action, different styles that of certain, not even certain level, but of certain skill set, then you get better. A guy who, he may not be a good level, but he throws a real good one too. You spar against that guy. You spar against a guy who's not at that level, but he knows how to bob and weave and come in and get those hooks off for you. You know, you come in, you spar a good inside fighter. You go spar a good counter puncher. That's what gets guys better. You spar those, and then you go fight those guys. I mean, you fight guys, and you fight guys who you look and you may, I mean, sometimes you can't control who you fight. But you try to steadily increase your thing, what you build. The problem is, if you see a guy blow a guy out, you know, in the ring, but he's doing it the same way, then you know he's not doing anything new in camp. He's not really learning anything in camp, but maybe to get stronger, faster, and to keep throwing the hard right. Not to straighten that right out, not to maybe slip your head off on an angle, but to keep throwing it hard and wide, not even to torque your body into it. That's the problem, because now that guy fights a guy who's seasoned, who sees that right coming, who may be able to counter to get there before. Now, what can the guy do? Where's your plan B? I mean, that's a big problem. That's training, and a lot of times, promoters don't want to promote guys like that.
Hey, let me ask you, we have one last fight I want to talk about before we end here. And that's Errol Spence versus Lamont Peterson on the 20th of January in Vegas. What's your thoughts on that, Zeke?
That is probably going to be one of the better body-punching fights that we're going to see in a while. Both guys, when the fight warms down, both guys, they're going to go to the body. That's their power. That's their strength.
Peterson, to me, is a better outside fighter. Spence is a harder fighter, period. He's a bigger fighter. He's fought at a bigger weight. Peterson's natural – well, he's been fighting for 140 for years. Spence is naturally a pretty big 147 guy. With that said, Peterson might come in heavy. When he fought Danny Garcia, he came in heavy. He came in at 165. And that was for a 143-pound fight. It was a catch weight. It was for a 143-pound fight. So I'm going to need to come in at 165 and be heavy for 147-pound. That's heavy. With that said, Spence is still going to be the heavier guy, no matter what how much weight is on Peterson. He's the naturally bone-heavier guy, naturally harder-hitting guy. Where Spence is going to have his trouble is really if Peterson warms up in the fight. Peterson is probably one of the when he warms up in the fight, he's probably one of the better guys. I'm going to say more veteran looking guys, and I imagine the more veteran feeling kind of guys. He knows how to get his shots in, especially the hard body shots in. Not a tremendous head puncher, neither really is Spence because they concentrate on the body so much, but. Like Peterson's better at range. Spence is just harder. I'm going to favor Spence just because when you get inside and they both kind of can get their shots off on body shots, you want to go with a harder guy.
Spence has an awful lot of he has an awful lot of talent. That kid, he could get a lot better. Actually, he's got a lot of room for improvement. He's already good. I mean, I think he's got an awful lot of talent, too. Way too much for Peterson. Way too much. I think
Peterson is better. Is just all around better. And that's going to give Spence trouble. I think Spence, he's younger and he's fresher. And Peterson, he doesn't take the best shot. He doesn't take, especially early. Now, once Peterson warms up, I haven't seen him rocked or anything. But he was knocked out early by Matisse. Victor Ortiz dropped him early. Tim Bradley dropped him early. He's had his moments of being dropped early and stopped early once. With that said, after the third round, Peterson's a monster. Peterson's an absolute monster. I just think the weight differential is going to be the telling difference. Spence is not a guy that you're going to go ahead and rip through. Danny Garcia respected Rich Speed. I thought it was a robbery that they gave Danny Garcia that Peterson fight. This might be a stoppage. I'm almost leaning toward a stoppage. Just Spence is too big. As simple as that.
Okay. Yeah, Spence
well, guys, we're up against their time limit.
Too many things going for him,
Yeah.
He's on
his way up.
I appreciate everything you guys have done this tonight, and we have next week we have another powerful show with another. I'll send you out an email as who our guest will be, and I think you're really going to like it. But I appreciate Chris. I appreciate everything you do every week. It's fun to be with you. And you always
make good to have a guy that's hard of hearing in there once in a while, you know. Got to give the old guy his shot too, you know.
Hey, him get in. Chris, I'm sorry to see we lost Ray and Berger.
When?
Yesterday.
Oh,
I don't know. I didn't know if you knew that or not.
No, I didn't. I was away on a Chincoteague for 5 days.
Oh, okay.
Oh man.
Yeah.
I just got back.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, Russ Bialko died. Yes, they buried him yesterday. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, you know? I saw that too. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. But, I go back I've known him a long time.
Sure.
You know? Holy God.
Great family.
So I knew he wasn't feeling good. I knew he had some problems, some health problems.
Mm-hmm.
Damn, that's terrible.
Yep.
We just had that Marcus Hook reunion. He didn't come. The first time he didn't show it at one of them. And that's only about 3 weeks ago. So he must have been damn sick. You know? That's sad. Well, Christ. What the hell can you do?
Yep.
That's a shame. Well, I enjoyed your show tonight, guys. I had some laughs.
Good. All right.
Been a pleasure, Dr. Chris, as always.
See you guys next week.
Okay.
Next week.
Listen to you next week, brother. All right, I'll see you.
Yeah, yeah.
Bye now.
Next week, sure.
Take care, Frank.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, take care, Chris.
Bye now.
Well, Z, it's been fun being with you, you and Ty again tonight. And as always, you're always our a man in the corner there for being the technical operations guy. And it's always a pleasure being with you. And it's always been a pleasure to be with you and your family, no matter where. But I think we're having more fun now than we used to have in years ago. But, at least enjoyed it more. how about giving us a fast update on medical update on Mr. Mel?
He's been doing well. He's been doing well. His wife is back from Barbados, and he's been doing pretty good.
Good, good, good. All right, you want to lead us out?
I sure do. Oh, my goodness, this is a wonderful show, another wonderful show. I want to thank Amir Mansour for joining us, Dr. Chris, as always. I definitely want to thank you, Ty, and all my Fighting Words family. These shows definitely in memory of Bob. And if anyone wants to hear any Fighting Words, please do call. Butch.
Ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate everything that both the Zito and Ty do for us, and Chris being on with us every week and having great interviews with people like Amir Mansour. We appreciate you listening each and every week. We want to remind you that these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of Police and Fire Services. These are very, very tough times domestically and as well as and abroad. Please, when you see somebody in uniform, please let them know you know they're there. A simple handshake, a wink, or nod of your head, just to let them know that you think positive for them. These programs are dedicated to those who've lost their lives in line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longview Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Hillsborough County Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotloff, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Ardeth Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, F. Dilley, Special Inspector Vinny Galaccio, Delaware State Trooper Stephen Ballard, Delaware State Trooper Sergeant Rodney Bond, Kissimmee Police Department, Matthew Mackey Baxter, Kissimmee Sergeant Sam Howard. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hands. Good night, God bless, and have a great week.
Shema Hezahir Ma Son Hashem Vorat Fet Hakuig Again Ma Yer Ma
Shema Lech Ma Yer Ma Shema Hezahir Ma Son Hashem
Grief and pain are all I fiery blade engaged to lead. He'd break the bravest in the field. To sing his praise as sweet harps play, and proudly toast his noble fame, whose spirit and with mind aflame saw flesh and strength and length of days.
May God rest his soul.